This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Quite often, when people crave a change of scenery, an adventure, something new to do, they leave town, convinced that what they're seeking is elsewhere. But what if it isn't? What if what you think you know about the place where you live is only part of the story? What if a place like Charlotte has more to offer, some undiscovered treasures lying in wait? Is that really possible? We're going to find out this hour. Given that this city is the premier tourist destination in the state, we must have something going for us. So we're going to turn to two individuals who have done the research and assembled two separate lists. Let's call them bucket lists of things all Charlottians should do. Sarah Croslin is executive editor of magazines for the Charlotte Observer and the author of 100 Things to Do in Charlotte Before You Die, as well as the Food Lover's Guide to Charlotte. Hopefully the two are not connected in any particular way. Thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
She joins us in our Spirit Square studio along with Jarvis Holliday, a freelance journalist and nightlife blogger for Charlotte Magazine. He has contributed to their August cover story, 50 Things Every Charlottean Should Do. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
And as we go through the program, you may have some suggestions or comments of your own. CharlotteTalks at WFAE.org is a great way to get to us, or search for Facebook for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter as well. Between the two of you, we have about 150 different things that people can do. It would take them at least a year, I would think, to do most of these without leaving town. How many of these things have the two of you actually done? Sarah, I'll start with you. Ladies first.
Well, combined, I'm certain that we've done almost all of them, I think, at this point. You know, in doing the book, when I first started out, I thought, oh, this is going to be hard to come up with a list of 100. And it turned out that I was easily able to write probably 3/4 of them already having done those things, because I've been covering Charlotte for so long as a writer and editor and covering all the fun stuff there is to do in Charlotte. So then I had the really fun task of trying to do the other 25 things, which has been both a challenge but a lot of fun. So I've done most everything in this book in some sense of doing the actual thing.
And this is not a Charlotte Observer book. This is your book.
That is true, yes.
You work for the Observer, but this you did in your spare time.
That's correct.
And you took it to a publisher, and they said, I'm told that they said to you, well, you know, give us a list of 10 things, and we'll see if this might be interesting to readers. And you came up with 25 off the top of your head.
Yes, it was easy. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that I do is I write about Charlotte for national publications and sort of promoting Charlotte a lot of the time. So for me, there were so many things just sort of on the tip of my tongue that I thought, people have to do this. This is so much fun and a neat thing in Charlotte.
So Jarvis, this that you contributed to the list in Charlotte Magazine, and there are 50 things on that list. How many of those things have you done? Because you do a lot of stuff aside from compiling lists of things to do.
Right. Yeah, I actually counted. I've done 47 of the 50
Whoa.
Things. Yeah, and I think similar to what Sarah said, you know, I've lived here a long time, and my job is to cover Charlotte in many different ways and contribute to different publications. So in getting to know the city over the years, you experience these things that also reinforce how much there is to do in Charlotte. And one great thing about when Charlotte Magazine published this story and when it went online, many people on social media, particularly on Twitter, they would comment on how many of the 50 things they've done. Ah. They would either say, I only have 10 more left to do, or I haven't done half these things. And you could kind of see the difference between maybe the newcomers and the long-timers or the natives. But in putting together the list is very well-rounded, and it's many things that are actual things you can do and other things that are kind of more philosophical.
I want to launch into this list, but before I do, did you get response as well? Have you gotten response from your book from people in Charlotte?
Yeah, you know, what's funny is even just watching someone flip through it, they look at things and they're like, wow, I had no idea that this existed here. You know, I would have never thought to do that. And I think that's the point for me, is to sort of, you know, expose things that people aren't necessarily going to think of.
Well, I found a lot of things that I didn't know. I swear to God, I do the show every day. We do every topic known to man in Charlotte, and there were things that I didn't know about. So I feel
good.
Like, yeah, you did a good job there. But there's also this thing. I grew up in the D.C. area, and we never did any of the touristy things there are to do unless relatives were coming to town. And then we took them to the Smithsonian or the Washington earn money, but otherwise we never set foot in Washington. Do you find that that's the case with a lot of Charlotte natives? Not only do they not know some of these things exist, they would just never do them.
Yeah, I have a couple of friends of mine. One of the things that's actually on the list is number 10 on the 50 things list is don't be so surprised when you meet a native charlatan. Because, I would always say that if I'm in a room of 10 people in Charlotte, 8 of them aren't from here.
Yeah.
And I kind of think that's what people are used to, not really seeing many natives. So as I've made friends over the years, I've always kind of been surprised when they are natives and to hear them say the things that they've experienced. But I often talk about things, about a place that's been open for a couple of years that I like to go to, and they will never heard of it.
Yeah.
I think because, they've lived here so long, they've kind of been entrenched in their communities and their parts of town.
You get into a habit, and you do the things that you
absolutely.
Want. Let's, since you're talking, and you started with, number 10 on your list, uh-huh. let me pick out one that I saw that okay. leapt off the page for me. It's a pretty simple thing. Stay put. I mean, where did that come from?
That's right. That credit goes to the editor. So when the editors were developing the feature story, they reached out to several of their freelance writers, including myself, kind of asked us to submit some things. And then from there, they came up with 50 yeah. and then assigned each of us some of them to write. But the stay put was just to kind of highlight how many things there are to do in Charlotte. Again, I think people sometimes kind of take it for granted how much there is to do here, or they might not be aware of it, or they think they have to go to other cities to do this stuff. So staying put was just a way of owed to how much there is to do in Charlotte.
You can't enjoy things if you're gone. You divided your book, Sarah, into sections, shopping and fashion, culture and history, recreation and sport, music and entertainment, and you begin with food and drink. And much to the great pleasure of one of our beer-loving producers, you actually start with a beer recommendation. You call it Say Cheers with Beers on Tuesdays at Noda Brewery. Why Tuesdays?
So on Tuesdays, their head brewer, Chad Henderson, he creates a notable beer is what they call it. And so it's a different small batch beer every week. And so it's something that's, there's actually a couple of other breweries around town who do the same thing now on different days. But Noda kind of started this and it's a ton of fun, especially, I think the brewery scene here is obviously something that's growing really quickly in general. So I think people are, I've mentioned that several times in this book is kind of neat little Charlotte things that people don't necessarily think of. But that one in particular is just totally different. Chad's extremely talented. You're going to get a great beer every time, and you're just going to meet some interesting people.
Well, we just did a show from Old Mecklenburg
right.
Brewery a couple of weeks ago, and I was aware of Old Mecklenburg on tap and in the bottle. I did not know that they had a beer garden
yeah.
at the brewery.
Gorgeous beer garden.
Yeah, it's gorgeous, and you can go out there and you can enjoy anything they've made that's on tap recently that they're freshly making, plus they have food, and that's the case at a lot of these breweries, and people don't know it.
Yeah, no, I mean, the breweries are such a fun thing to do here, and, a lot of times they're great to follow on Twitter or Facebook or something because they have, food truck nights, they have run nights, there's so many different events that you could just spend a whole week doing different things at breweries, I think.
Hmm. If a different kind of alcohol is your preference, I think your number 3 tip suggests a place to enjoy fine wines and scotch on the 14th floor of the Ritz-Carlton at Urban Sip. That's way out of my price range. I'll never go there, so go ahead and talk about it.
Oh, you've got to go there. It's Urban Sip is one of my favorite spots in Charlotte because it does not feel like Charlotte. I will say that. You're on the 14th floor. You've got, amazing skyline views. You're actually overlooking the epicenter. They have a fantastic wine selection and scotch selection. They also have great little small plates, charcuteries and cheeses. It's just quiet. It's kind of a dimly lit kind of spot, perfect sort of after-dinner drink, date night kind of thing. I think it's, it's a fun special occasion or just a great way to end the evening uptown.
How special?
It's not a cheap destination.
It's
but
the Ritz. Come on.
Right. Go have a cocktail maybe.
And that'll be your monthly outing.
Right.
That's not the only place you talk about getting scotch. You talk about getting schooled in scotch. At the Ballantine Resort. That's number 12 on here.
Yes, Ballantine has their gallery restaurant has an incredible scotch program. I actually just saw that they recently paired, I believe, with Woodford Reserve on creating some barrels that their manager sort of worked with them specifically on creating barrels for Ballantine. So I think they have this just, they developed it a couple, probably 5 years ago, I guess, maybe. It could have been longer. But they sort of started to develop this Scotch program, and now they have classes. They have an appreciation club. So it's a neat destination that you wouldn't necessarily expect.
We have 150 things to share with you over the course of this hour about things to do in Charlotte, some of which you probably have done, others of which you probably don't even know about, which we'll go through in this hour. So stay with us here on Charlotte Talks this morning on WFAE. Jarvis, a lot of the things on the list in Charlotte Magazine seem, unlike the Ritz-Carlton, to be relatively inexpensive. And, you know, if you stay put, you're already saving money. You're saving money on gas or air travel or hotel rooms and eating out. How many of the things on your list cost practically nothing?
I would say easily a fifth of them probably costs nothing, and then half of them are very inexpensive. The ones that cost nothing are like hiking Crowder's Mountain, which I've done about three times, I think, at this point. The picnic at Symphony Park, you know, you bring your own stuff. One of the anecdotes I wrote for this was doing the history walk through Uptown that they launched in 2012, yeah. And it has the markers in the concrete, in the sidewalk that kind of guides you. Those are free. They're the ones that are very inexpensive that are really become annual traditions in Charlotte. I like the annual Greek festival that we have and food truck Fridays and stuff, that's free. You have to pay for the food, but just the to get there and enjoy
And you work, as I've said, Sarah, for The Observer, but this book is independent of them. What made you want to write it? Why did you write it?
Actually, it was the publishing company reached out to me because they do these books in a lot of different markets, and they thought that Charlotte was a sort of a prime market for this at this point. They felt like it's, a city that's growing. It's got a lot of interesting things. And so they found me, I guess, through social media and sites as far as covering Charlotte, and asked me to write the book.
Did you stop at 100 because that's a good number to put on the cover, or would it have been easy to do 150, 200, 136? I mean, why did you use 100?
100 was a good number to put on the cover. I think I really could have done more. I mean, it was funny, towards the end I sort of had about 110 and kept having to figure out where I could cut because there were so many different ones that
sequel.
I wanted to do.
Sequel.
Right, that's right. 100 more things to do before you die. Live longer.
How long do you think that will take? Seriously, it's the perfect book for a sequel, as is the list in Charlotte Magazine, primed for a sequel.
Yes, well, and actually, the publishing company has already talked to me about doing a book that would be similar, that would be around the holidays, sort of like what to do in Charlotte around the holidays, because that's the kind of thing that there's so many, events just like that. And like Jarvis was mentioning, festivals. I mean, it's amazing to me. I feel like someone could write a book entirely on September festivals in Charlotte, because the month of September has, it feels like, three festivals every day. So
Charlotte is off for the summer. It reopens in September, and it reopens with a vengeance.
Yes.
There's so much to do, you can't do any of it.
Absolutely.
We have to take a break. Sarah Crosland is with us, the executive editor of magazines for the Charlotte Observer, but author of her own book, The 100 Things to Do in Charlotte Before You Die. Jarvis Holliday is a freelance writer and contributor to the list in Charlotte Magazine, 50 Things Every Charlottean Should Do. We're coming right back with more on these lists on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about things to do in Charlotte, thanks to Sarah Crosland's book, 100 Things to Do in Charlotte Before You Die, a bucket list to speak of. Jarvis Holliday is a contributor to Charlotte Magazine's 50 Things Every Charlottean Should Do. We were talking off the air a moment ago, and Jarvis, you were saying that in 2005, a lot of the things that are on the lists, both these lists, weren't here.
Absolutely. Yeah, 2005 is the year I moved here, and just in the last 9 years, seen this different scenes that I've developed and cultivated, and two of them particularly are the dining scenes and the craft beer brewery scenes. I remember writing for Charlotte Magazine, and for any city magazine, one of the primary things you do is you cover the dining scene, the mm-hmm. restaurant culture. And we had some pretty good restaurants back in 2005, but I would hear people often talk about, you know, their favorite restaurants are franchising these chains, you know. And so that doesn't speak well for your city when, you know, the most popular restaurants are the chains. And, you know, some of the chains and franchises are really good. Mm-hmm. But over the years, as we develop a lot of locally owned homegrown restaurants, particularly throughout Uptown and neighborhoods like Noda and Plaza Midwood and South End, it's really taking the city to another level. And people credit it to, you know, the newcomers that have moved here and wanted to open restaurants. And then you can't discount the impact that Johnson & Wales right. opening their campus and now having graduated several chefs has had yeah. in the city.
You know, it's interesting. I guess maybe the recession played a role in slowing down people's coming to the finer restaurants in town because they couldn't afford it for a long time. But they're still there. And what I like about your book, Sarah, is that you kind of blend the two together. On the one hand, you're at the Ritz-Carlton. On the next page, you're at Max, on literally side by side on number 19 and number 20. Five Church, which is a great restaurant downtown, and then Loopy's, which has been here for years and is not a it's not a fine dining establishment, but there's good food there.
Yes. Yeah. I think that, you know, people want both those experiences. People love, you know, you can go to Five Church and I talk about citing celebrities at Five Church because that seems
aren't they
to be
all gone, though, now that the movie business is yeah. abandoned?
Well, I feel like my book's even a little outdated because I'm talking about Banshee and Homeland, yeah. neither of which are here. But my hope is that more will come back. But yeah, so, you know, you can go have a really, you know, nice dinner and cocktail at a place like Five Church. But I think people also love to know about a place like Loopy's right. where they've got, you know, these old photographs and it's kind of got that gritty feel and like chili served in styrofoam, that kind of thing.
And you can star gawk at, if there's any stars there, at Five Church for a cocktail and then go to Loopy's.
Yeah, there you go. Here's your progressive dinner. It's perfect.
Unless I missed it, Jarvis, the closest you come to a watering hole recommendation is to spend the day at the U.S. National Whitewater Center. That's number 36 on the list of 50 things every charlatan should do. And although they are doing much better than they were when they first opened in terms of people right. coming, it remains a place, I think, that a lot of people in Charlotte have never been to, have never seen, have only read about it or heard about it in the newspaper or on radio or television. What are they missing by not going there?
Yeah, and that's another place that wasn't here in 2005.
Right.
They opened in 2006, kind of at kind of half speed, half capacity, because they had issues where their road wasn't open and everything. So they kind of opened at full speed in 2007. You're right, they kind of had some, you know, missteps in the beginning, but it's really taken off in recent years. But one of the great things, you go there, it's free to go there. As far as you actually go there, you have to pay, I think, about $5 a park. But a lot of people go running or hiking or ride their bikes around there for free. But then to use the activities, I mean, the Whitewater Center has either, if not the largest or one of the largest rock climbing walls of its kind out there. Huh. To be able to go kayaking on the actual Whitewater Rapids in Charlotte, not in some, you know, far out place.
And they can adjust the rapids
absolutely.
To your skill level.
Yeah. And then yeah. they actually have a pretty cool restaurant and bar there that overlooks the rapids. And so plenty of people will go there just to eat lunch or dinner or have a beer. And throughout the warm months, they do, I think, live music on Thursdays. They do, I think they call it the River Jam. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a lot of things that you can spend an entire day at the Whitewater Center and not feel like you're in Charlotte.
Yeah. Your suggestion at number 69 on your list, Sarah, is to zip line and dine at the Whitewater Center. Do you zip line into the dining room? How does that work? Do you zip
that line would be out? Fun. I wish.
Your table's ready.
You know, the Whitewater Center, I feel like it's one of those places, like you were talking about, that you take out-of-town visitors because you don't think about it until they come, and then you think, oh, we've got this amazing place just outside of town. And I mentioned it actually twice in here, the zip line and dine, and then for the craft kayak to craft beer, because they have several things like that that are evening kind of things. You can go after work with zip lining. You go, you do their ropes course and zip line through, you know, tree canopy across the water, that kind of thing. And then you actually eat on Hawk Island, which is the island in the middle of all the white water. And they have a big bonfire out there. They have a huge dinner prepared for you.
And how do you get there? You get there by the zip line? Is that how you get
you
there?
You actually walk across to that. Unfortunately, right. There's no zip lining into it. And probably no wine with the zip line either.
At number 42 on your list, and believe me, the people down the street are going to they're going to go berserk when they hear this. Feel the Speed at the NASCAR Hall of Fame. Now, by my calculations, nobody has ever been there. So you're putting it on the list is making them very happy. Again, what are people missing by not having seen the NASCAR Hall of Fame?
Oh, I hope someone goes. I think NASCAR, honestly, it's not really my thing, but you can't help if you live in Charlotte to be a little bit sort of invested and interested in NASCAR. The NASCAR Hall of Fame, actually, the first time I went, it was for a press event. I wasn't particularly excited about it, but it's a really cool facility. I mean, they have, these cars that you can see. They've got movies about NASCAR. The thing that I went for was about crashes, which I think is inevitably everyone's favorite part of NASCAR. So you sort of got this exciting kind of thing that I think even if you're not necessarily interested in NASCAR itself, you're going to think it's kind of a fun thing.
Tell you what I found when I went there, because we did a program from there. We've done a program from everywhere. is that you get, I mean, even I'm not a follower of NASCAR, but when you go through the museum, you get it. You get it, why people would be interested in it. You kind of get the bug yourself a little bit. You feel when you leave that you know more about the sport and how difficult it is to not only be a driver, but to be a pit crew member.
Yes.
And all the things that go into making this more than just guys going making left turns all day. It really is, you come away with a feeling for what it is.
That's true.
Absolutely. And, you know, talking about the whole NASCAR thing, and this, again, is one of the things that, out of town is when people kind of look at Charlotte from a national perspective. They usually talk about this professional sports team. So they'll talk about, well, now the Hornets and the Hornets are back and the Panthers and NASCAR. And they actually usually talk about NASCAR more than maybe we do here in the city. And I think for a while, again, another thing, I remember one of the first things I remember going to in 2005 after I moved here. I moved here in August 2005, and about a month or two later, there was a pep rally downtown because Charlotte was trying to land the NASCAR Hall of Fame.
Right.
At the time, Charlotte was one of about four or five finalists. I think the others were like Atlanta and where in Florida, where the NASCAR is.
Daytona?
Daytona. Yeah.
Some say we lost, by
the way. And so I remember they had the slogan, and they gave us like these kind of towels or flags or something. And I think it said, racing lives here, racing belongs here, or something like that.
Racing was born here.
Racing was born here. And so, you know, after the Hall of Fame, NASCAR Hall of Fame opened, at the time and over the years, people kind of felt like Charlotte didn't want to embrace NASCAR the way it should, because maybe the image they thought NASCAR had.
We've become Tony.
Yeah, we wanted to be known more as the banking executives,
right,
not the NASCAR crowd. You know, people would make fun of the NASCAR crowd as being the people with mullets and, you know, and all this stuff. But as the sport has grown, and then the drivers come more to the forefront, Jimmy Johnson and Jeff Gordon, you see them in suits,
right,
when they're not in their racing suits, you know. And so that's kind of helped change it. Jeff Gordon owns a winery, a wine label, that served at restaurants like, I think, Five Church and Fahrenheit. You know, so as the sport has grown and Charlotte has seen more as the value, and they've embraced it more.
In addition to contributing to this list in Charlotte Magazine, Jarvis, you write the Dusk Till Dawn blog for the magazine, which usually features about 20 to 25 events a week that people can take advantage of. How much of Charlotte nightlife made this 50 things to do in Charlotte list?
Probably really only a couple of things were nightlife. I think from a for the magazine's perspective and a broader readership, it was probably more of the things that's going to appeal to a wider range of readers.
Number 15 was have a Charlotte Hollywood night.
Yeah.
What is that?
Well, I was kind of talking about, you know, kind of mentioned earlier, how, you know, the movies and the TV shows that have been filmed here, and how you can actually go and see some of the locations that they filmed. And I remember, you know, doing Homeland, kind of spotting when, you know, I could recognize certain buildings. And the Hollywood Night was kind of talking about that. But the nightlight stuff and, you know, that I cover with the Dusted On blog, the reason why the list each week of events, there are so many, is because how the nightlife scene has grown so much. Mm-hmm. While NoDa still likes to call itself an historic arts district, unfortunately, during the recession, when a lot of the art galleries closed, the businesses that came after that are mostly bars, you know, and then look at the number of craft breweries we have in NoDa. So you're more likely to find people bar hopping than gallery crawling in NoDa. Plaza Midwood is the same thing. There are so many great bars like Soul and 22 and Peculiar Rabbit and Whiskey Warehouse. And so now that we have so many more bars, lounges, and nightclubs, there are more things to do. And then it's become more sophisticated.
Sounds like Charlotte is high after five.
Yeah, well, part of it has become, I would talk to my editors at the magazine about this, about how, because we actually started the blog, Dusted On blog, almost 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And early on, people thought of nightlife as being, oh, I have to be in the club at 1 a.m. Mm-hmm. or I have to go to a foam party, a wet t-shirt contest. They just kind of had this view of nightlife being, oh, I'm not in college anymore, I'll do that.
Right.
But nightlife is, you know, going for drinks at Nan and Byron's or at Shima or BLT Steak. You know, nightlife is all these galas we have in Charlotte. We're in fall season now. There's so many black tie galas. And, you know, nightlife is all these fashion shows we have throughout the fall season at places like Bubble and Sweet and the Fillmore.
I wasn't kidding about high after five. In fact, your publisher of your book came to you, I believe, Sarah, and said, I think there are too many things in here having to do with alcohol.
Yes, that did happen. It was actually one of the many copy edits my book went through. I noticed a note in the side that said, this is getting boring. It's too many cocktails and drinks and stuff. And I was like, we have a different idea of boring for sure. But I think that...
And aside from a beer culture and a coffee culture, which we seem to be developing as well, we have a mixologist culture now.
Yes, absolutely. And I mentioned that a couple of times in the book. I think, you know, Charlotte has some great cocktail bars, all the places that Jarvis mentioned, you know, and I mentioned in the book too, vineyards that are in the area. I think, you know, Charlotte definitely likes its nightlife.
Let's talk about something that's on both of your lists, and I believe it's on both of your lists in the same position. Number two. Price's Chicken Coop.
Yes.
Jarvis, you say Charlottians should wait in line for Price's Chicken, and Sarah, you suggest chowing down there. We've actually done a show, again, on fried chicken here, and Price's was at or near the top of our list as well. What is it about Price's, aside from the fact it's a Charlotte legend?
It is certainly a Charlotte legend, and while we've talked a lot about the things that have come here in the last 5 to 10 years, you know, Price's is one of the things that's been here for decades. And so waiting in line for Price's is because if you've gone to Price's or driven past it in South End, you know that, especially during lunchtime, there's a line down
yes.
the street. People are park and dash across the street. So one of the things we should have added is be careful not to hit anyone because people just dash across the street to get in line at Price's. But because of how they, you know, run their restaurant, they get you in and out really quickly. And I don't know what, and they keep their menu
and
pretty
simple.
You can't eat there. You
yeah.
only have to.
There's
and
no
what's
seating.
Interesting, they keep very a short window of hours. I think maybe 11 till 4 or something. So you can go there for lunchtime or to grab something to go, but you can't go there for dinner.
Yeah.
And so people know if you want prices bad enough, you'll make the time and make the effort to go over there.
Hear your perspective on what makes them so popular.
I think it's amazing fried chicken is what makes them so popular. I think it's, you know, it's funny because that's one of those places that I frequently recommend when people say, oh, I love food, you know, tell me some place I need to go that's sort of a hole in the wall. I'm not going to think of it. And I'm like, you got to go to Price's. And what's funny is I've multiple times gotten the response from people saying that they're like, yeah, so I got grease all over my steering wheel because inevitably I'm eating fried chicken in the car because you can't leave it. It smells too good.
It makes your steering wheel finger looking good. Like,
right.
What can I tell you? We're talking about things to do in Charlotte, lots of things to do in Charlotte with Sarah Crosland and Jarvis Holliday here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. You also say when you go to Price's, bring cash. It never occurred to me, but they don't take credit cards.
That is true. And if I recall correctly, they have like tea that they serve. They serve iced tea, but if you want something else, they have a drink machine in the place. It's definitely a unique kind of laid-back kind of spot.
Yeah. I'm going to get back to this nightlife because you up and down College Street, which is right behind where we're sitting right now, at night on almost any night but Monday, because Monday seems to be pretty slow, although that may change when the light rail goes all the way to the university.
Absolutely.
It's a young people's haven because of all these bars up and down College Street. But it's not just on College Street that we have nightlife. And I have a question about age. Is this something that is only really enjoyable to people who are 21 to 30? Or is this something that people who've lived in Myers Park for 30 years can enjoy?
Yeah, it depends on the venue and also maybe the parts of town. But I think as we've all gotten older, we've tried to hang on to our youth. And so I think the crowds you will see at certain venues are older than you would have seen, you know, some years ago. Epicenter, you talk about College Street, you know, on one end you have Epicenter, which is pretty much an outlet mall of, you know, nightlife activity. And then you go further down, you pass, you know, places like Cosmos Cafe and clubs, Phoenix and Republic. And then further down, a new sports bar and lounge called Sports One, which is opened by a guy from Atlanta. I think the episode is a good example of how what Charlotte and Charlottesians prefer now is they want to be able to walk to a variety of different places. And so that's where Epicenter has become so popular, because you can go into Enzo, which is a great Asian restaurant and bar, and have some sushi or some sake. And then you can go upstairs and go dance in that suite or bubble or Whiskey River, which is the bar that Dale Earnhardt Jr. owns. And you'll find different variety ages. So you're going to find a younger crowd at Sweet, but you're going to find an older one probably at Howl at the Moon.
Yeah, and I think, to answer my own question, I think, you know, right next door to the Epicenter, where it's a lot of young people and a lot of young people kind of bars, you have Bar Coco and the bar at the top of the 14th floor of the
Urban
Ritz,
Sip.
Urban Sip that you mentioned at the Ritz-Carlton. So that's for moneyed people of a certain age that they would enjoy perhaps more. Sarah Crosland, Jarvis Holliday with us. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're going through a lot of things that you may not know about to do in Charlotte, because as we were just talking off the air, the places like the Levine Cultural Campus at the foot of South Tryon Street, where the Beckler and the Mint and the Knight Theater are, weren't here several years ago, nor was the North Carolina Music Factory, nor was the U.S. National Whitewater Center, nor was the NASCAR Hall of Fame. So many things have popped up here in just the last 10 years that you may not have done them. Sarah Crosland has done most of them. She has put together a book called 100 Things to Do in Charlotte Before You Die, and Jarvis Holliday has also done a lot of them, if not most of them. He is part of a list of contributors to 50 Things Every Charlottean Should Do, which was the cover story in August's issue of Charlotte Magazine. Both of you agree about something else. Number 27 on your list, Jarvis, is eat from food trucks. Sarah, number 8, dig into food truck fare. Our food critics who visit us every quarter here on this program have waxed poetic about the food trucks on this program, but they are foodies. So from a non-foodie point of view, what's so special about the food trucks? Where do you find them? When?
We have probably dozens of food trucks in the Charlotte area now, and a lot of them, they'll set up in different places during lunchtime, so you'll find some throughout, you know, uptown and university area. But then we have these kind of rallies that go on weekly. The most popular is Food Truck Fridays in South End. Mm-hmm. It's right there kind of near the corner of
Camden
and Tryon. Yeah, and so that's probably the most popular. But then NoDa has a Thursday food truck rally they started. So you have a food truck rally at least on every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Now, what makes these, from somebody who's not a galloping gourmet, what makes these special? Why eat from a truck?
Well, I do think there is a little bit of just the novelty of it. It's fun. I mean, you know, and I think that's what's made food trucks popular across the country in recent years. But also, these trucks are serving up some really great food. I mean, I think, you know, there's trucks like that are going to have, you know, local food. I think people might anticipate, you know, at a food truck, if they haven't done it before, they're anticipating basically burger and fries, that kind of thing. But that's not at all what you're going to get.
It's pretty gourmet.
Oh, I mean, they're extremely
gourmet.
It's not
like going to the county fair or the state fair and eating a corn dog.
You know, everything from Korean tacos to, you know, totally locally sourced stuff. There's a lot of sweets food trucks here, which are fun. So it's a variety.
And Jarvis, at number three, you suggest eat where the chefs do. Where might that be?
Well, the chefs, and actually a lot of the chefs, they support each other and eat at each other's restaurants. And again, that kind of goes back to the number of chefs that have graduated from, you know, Johnston & Wales. I did an interview with Chef Rocco Whelan a few months ago. He's the chef and owner of Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm. That's the new restaurant on the top of the Hyatt.
Yes, exactly.
On Caldwell.
The tower on Caldwell. And it's Charlotte's kind of first true rooftop restaurant and bar. Has, you know.
There was Slugs years ago.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I should say maybe only current.
Okay.
It's a restaurant bar. And one of the things that actually kind of goes back to another thing on the list, I think was number three on our list, was find your favorite skyline shot.
Yeah.
So Fahrenheit has become probably the new favorite place people to take their skyline shots. But when I interviewed Chef Rocco Whelan for a story, he talked about how he, you know, hangs, you know, he splits his time between Charlotte and Cleveland, and he hangs out with the chefs from Five Church and from the Moffitt Group, who run Barrington's and Good Food on Monfort. He named several other chefs. So they all kind of support each other because they're all into the farm-to-table movement.
Right. You mentioned something. The great way to explore food, Sarah, is by taking a feast food tour. Now, I've never heard of this. So what is that?
Yeah, so Charlotte actually has a couple of different companies that do this kind of thing where you can take tours around different neighborhoods or uptown. And you're kind of getting a behind-the-scenes look at food in Charlotte. So the tour might, you know, go in the kitchen of one local restaurant. It may have a chance to sample small dishes at another restaurant. You might go over here into 7th Street Market and take a look around there and get some samples. It varies every time what you're going to get necessarily as far as what's part of the tour, but it's a really great way. It's funny, every person I've ever talked to who has done it raves about it because people who aren't necessarily familiar with the food scene here get a chance.
So how do you get on the tour?
You can sign up. You can go to Feast Food Tours, their website, and you can sign up there.
I'm going to speed through some things here before we run out of time. But before we leave food, I want to pick up at number 23 on Jarvis's list and on number 22 on yours. 23 on Jarvis's list is Eat Fried Pickles. Number 22 on yours is Celebrate a Special Occasion at, is it McNinch or McNeish House?
McNinch is how I've always
That's
said
how
it,
I've always said it, too, but I've heard people say it otherwise. Where's the best fried pickle?
I have to say, from my personal experience, it's the place in Plaza Midwood.
The Diamond?
Well, the Diamond has good one, but the one they specialize in brunch. I cannot remember. It's called
Zeta Jane's? Trying to think of
across the street. I have to come back to me.
I'll come back and think about it. So, now, I've only been to McNinch House once. I must say, it was the best meal I have ever had, probably anywhere. Except Italy.
It's a pretty impressive spot.
It's unbelievably good.
Yes, and it's quite the atmosphere as well. You're not going to find that many other places. You feel like you're in a very, very elegant home. I feel
and
like
you are.
There. Yes.
You're in a former mayor's house where President Taft once stayed. But this has been in business for quite a while. It's a prefix?
Yes.
Dinner, a couple of seatings a night in dining room scattered throughout the first floor of this house, and it is just top-notch.
It is. It's an outstanding meal. I think it is. It's like nothing else you're gonna have in Charlotte. And I feel like it's such a special occasion restaurant here that you don't hear people saying, yeah, Tuesday night I'm going over to McNinch House for dinner. It's much more of this is our anniversary or birthday or something like that. It's a great spot.
Because you're gonna drop some money.
It is definitely not the cheapest thing on my list.
But it's worth it. If you can afford it, it's worth it. If you save your shekels for a year for your birthday dinner, it's worth it. Have you thought about the fried pickle thing?
I haven't, but there was one food-related thing I wanted to point out. It's actually number 13 on Charlotte Magazine's list. It says, number 13, Know Your Leaders, but it's talking about the annual Mallard Creek Barbecue. Uh-huh. People who have been in Charlotte a long time know that that's kind of a cross-section of two things that are sources of contention in Charlotte: barbecue and politics. So this event is huge. It's always held the fourth Thursday in October, so it's coming up at Mallard Creek Presbyterian Church and University, and it's an outdoor event. And all the local politicians over the years have come to speak and to shake hands with constituents. But then people come because you buy like maybe a $10 or $12 plate of barbecue, and it's really good. And if there's two things people argue about in Charlotte, is barbecue and politics.
So best fried pickle.
Best fried pickles. I'm going to have to go with Zadie James.
All right, fine. let's talk about some music and entertainment choices. Both of your lists recommend taking advantage of a Charlotte tradition, which is having a picnic at the Charlotte Symphony's Outdoor Pops concerts in the summer. I was going to say at South Park, but they do them elsewhere now as well. That's the only suggestion on your list, but if we read your blog, what opportunities for music would there be?
Live music throughout the week. You actually have, I'm drawing a blank here, but you have, again, the live music they do on Thursdays at the Whitewater Center, live music at Texicali at NC Music Factory, several bars and restaurants. Zen does live music, I think, on Wednesday. You have a lot of acoustic places around.
And you mentioned seven on your list, and one of them is Sing the Blues at Blue, which is a restaurant here on College Street, and Tap Along to Jazz at the Beckler Museum of Modern Art. Let's start at Blue. Is that just a dinner with and bar with music?
Yeah, Blue, I mean, Jarvis can probably talk about this as well. They've got, you know, they're sort of known for their martinis and jazz music. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they obviously also have some great food there. But it's a different kind of spot. It's sort of when you were talking earlier about the more upscale kind of nightlife experience, I think Blue's a great example of that.
I have to take exception to number 31 on your list.
Okay.
Which is, watch the Leonard Bernstein Symphony in Founders Hall. If I have to endure that one more time.
You're a true charlatan if you've seen it more than once.
I used to go in that building a lot. I avoid it like the plague from Thanksgiving to Christmas. That's because of those darn bears. But if you're four, it's a thrill.
Yes, absolutely. That is definitely one of the more family-friendly options on the list.
Now, winter is almost here. 49 on your list is to take a twirl on Uptown's ice rink. Now, if you're a newcomer, you may find this odd, and it's sponsored by another radio station, but I have to say that it is always packed.
Yes, I think that's such a popular thing. It doesn't feel like Charlotte at all, but, you know, you feel like you're in a movie, I feel like.
And a few years ago, they moved it to the place you say no one goes to, the NASCAR Hall of Fame Plaza.
That's right.
So, you know, NASCAR Hall of Fame in front has that huge plaza, so they filled that with ice, and people can...
And while it's there, you can't get to the NASCAR Hall.
One more thing getting in the way of that.
Both of you suggest taking in a Knights game, and evidently a lot of people have done that since it moved uptown. This is a new jewel in the crown that wasn't even here 2 years ago. That's only going to grow, one would think, with time. And speaking of professional sports, both of your lists have slot for that. On your list, Jarvis, it includes at number 34, pull for the Panthers and the Hornets no matter where you grew up. That could be a tall order for some Bulls fans
absolutely.
Bills fans.
Well, the biggest thing,
Buffalo people,
you especially found that with football, because the Carolina Panthers are playing their 20th season. Mm-hmm. So for someone who's 35 or older, they take 40 in order. They didn't grow up a Panthers fan.
Right.
And so a lot of and Panthers players have talked about that, is they come across so many fans. The kids are Panthers fans because they've grown up with the team, but their parents are Redskins, Steelers, Cowboys fans because they rooted for teams that before Charlotte had a professional football team. Mm-hmm. So our team is still relatively young. And then we also have We have the Charlotte Checkers, semi-pro hockey team. We have the Charlotte Hounds. We have, Major League Lacrosse here and everything. So there are a lot to do in professional sports. And one thing about the Knights, I read something recently that the Knights essentially went from last year being close to last in the league in attendance for baseball games near Fort Mill to now almost leading the league just right. Once they moved to uptown.
And don't forget the Roller Girls.
The Roller Girls, yes, the Charlotte Roller Girls.
Number 58, Sarah, you suggest spend pregame for the Panthers in their lair, because a lot of people don't have tickets to the game, but you can go and enjoy the pregame festivities and watch it on TV or listen to it on the radio, and then back the buzz at a Hornets game. So where's the Panthers' lair?
The Panthers' lair is, I guess, in the bottom of the stadium. And I think that's kind of one of the neat things about any of these sports, especially the Panthers, which, are sort of in the middle of the season right now, is there's so much that goes on around the games, Yeah. I mean, with Panthers, you can obviously tailgate before. There's tons of places around the stadium that, are new places that are popping up where they're drawing in crowds to come before, after, during the game.
And I'm curious about number 47. I don't want to run out of time before we talk about this. Spend the night in a treehouse. Huh?
That's a fun one. So there is a vineyard in Monroe, Treehouse Vineyards, where you can actually pay, as you would a hotel or something, and spend the night in one of their treehouses. They have one treehouse that you can rent by the hour to have drinks on the porch. You can have up to six people up there and have your wine. They have another treehouse that is completely set up for a night there. They've even got like a kitchen, bedroom, everything.
One has a fireplace, which would give me pause in a tree. I'm just saying.
There's also a Treehouse Whiskey and Fork that just opened in South Park. It's a new restaurant and bar around the whole Treehouse theme.
Really?
So I don't know what it is.
Where is that?
It's in South Park. It's next to Baku, the new restaurant. So Treehouse Whiskey and Fork specializes in American cuisine and whiskeys, but there is a treehouse in there. There's like a tree in the middle of the dining room.
And that's Jarvis Holliday, a contributor to 50 Things Every Charlottetean Should Do in the August issue of Charlotte Magazine, and Sarah Crosland, executive editor of the Charlotte Observer Magazines and also author of 100 Things to Do in Charlotte Before You Die on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. One of the things that we talked about earlier, but not many people may know about and fewer people have done, is this walk in the footsteps of Revolutionary War soldiers, which you can do up Tryon Street.
Yeah. If you they unveiled it in 2012, and essentially most of the monuments were already in Charlotte, but people say Charlotte has no history because most of the buildings were torn down. So over the years, the city and the county and the historic commissions, they put plaques or they erected certain statues.
And at one point, you could, if you have a smartphone, you can, I guess,
download the app, and you can find the places. But to me, what I did is I kind of ditched the app because I wanted to kind of look around. Uh-huh. But there are pavers in the concrete that guide you in direction. So if you just keep following the pavers that say Charlotte Liberty Walk, it'll take you through Tryon and side streets.
Now, both of you suggesting the city from on high. Sarah, take a flight in a Charlotte helicopter tour, or glide over Lake Norman in a hot air balloon. And Jarvis, you suggest gaining perspective at 1,625 feet. Is that the same thing as taking a helicopter tour?
No, that's hiking Crowder's Mountain.
Oh, okay.
That's in Gaston County. So that's a little bit outside of Charlotte, but everyone should do it.
Where do you get the helicopter tour?
They have, I believe that it actually leaves from maybe Gastonia, but you can take the tour. A lot of people opt to take it at in the evening, sort of sunset kind of time, so that you're, seeing the city both, in light and dark. And this was something that I originally came across when I was doing an article on really great dates in Charlotte. And so this was an extravagant one where, you could bring a bottle of champagne, go up in the helicopter, and go over Charlotte.
Now, the number one thing on your list was stay put. Number 19 is get out of town. I'm not even going to ask you to explain that because we don't have any time now, but I'll ask you off the air. Right. Sam emails, by the way, Jarvis, you're crazy. Greg's fried pickles at Pinky's are the best.
Oh, those are good. He's right. And as are their burgers.
Okay. Jarvis Holliday, one of the contributors to 50 Things Every Charlottean Should Do, and there are lots more we didn't get to in Charlotte Magazine, as well as the 100 Things to Do in Charlotte Before You Die by Sarah Crosland. It's a book. You can buy it. Thank you both for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you.